Joe Biden, abroad this week, walks a lonely road. Infrastructure, voting rights, seems to be going it alone on purely Democratic votes, assuming he can ensure those. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us each and every week wherever you find good podcasts at US of Ed, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. And check out the new podcast, Pacific Conversations, our chat with former Foreign Minister Bob Carr, out now. Pacific Conversations, wherever you find good podcasts, and at the website edtalks.com.au. Joe Manchin, a voice for the voiceless, a supporter for the underdog. Unfortunately, in this case, the underdog is the Republican Party. Manchin has made it clear this week he will not vote for the People Voting Rights Bill, which he initially co-sponsored, unless it merits bipartisan support. It would sound a noble goal, but surely any politician or political observer would have to be deaf, dumb, and blind to genuinely believe Republicans have been negotiating anything on this bill in good faith, really negotiating anything at all in good faith. And there are fears his insistence puts the whole Biden agenda at risk. What's your thoughts, Ed?
Well, I think you made exactly the right comment. He's putting the administration at risk, and he's doing it deliberately. What he has to gain by it is unclear, because he has at least four more years on his own term. But I think the notions of power run deep in some people, and being powerful is more important than anything, including justice in the right direction. So he had power in the Democratic Party when he favored these actions like voting rights and so on. And now he has power repelling them, getting his name in the paper in West Virginia and elsewhere, trying to make himself a king of something. But right now, he's the king of ignobility, as far as I'm concerned, because he jeopardizes the larger set of agendas. People must understand that his vote is crucial here, because you need 50 Democratic votes to get anything through. And the balance of power is held by Kamala Harris. If the Republicans all vote no, then it's up to Kamala. So he knows this. I don't know if he's trying to get Republican votes or trying to get in the newspaper. It's hard to say.
I would even go a step further on Manchin and ask, is he a Republican plant, an ostensible Democrat, but funded by traditionally Republican sources with the express intention of protecting the Republican agenda from the other side?
I don't think so. Manchin, you know, he was for the commission, for example. He's been for other Democratic initiatives, and he went along with the COVID initiative. And he's basically going along with the infrastructure initiative. It may be in two steps. But I think he has a lot to lose in his own community if he doesn't go along with things that create jobs. West Virginia needs jobs. So there's some agenda that is not Republican, but is Manchin-esque.
Well, speaking of infrastructure, and I think it will be very interesting to watch what he does and what he says around this one, what he votes. But Biden has walked away from talks with a small number of Republicans, failing to come to any kind of amendments that would satisfy them and win their votes, win Republican votes. I am not shocked, but now crafting a bill on purely Democratic votes, what are we likely to see, Ed?
Well, the big issue here is taxes. What are the taxes that will have to be imposed to get this through? The Republicans oppose all forms of tax. What we have to find out is some form of tax that Manchin will accept to get this through. And I'm not certain what that will be. Manchin has very little to gain on the tax issue, because West Virginia is one of the poorest states in the country and doesn't have a lot of rich people in. And the rich people who are there are the very ones who hold the poor people in West Virginia in the palm of their hands with their coal mines and the rest. And there's very strong interest in West Virginia moving away from coal, like here, and moving into new technologies. They're close enough to Washington, D.C., but far enough away so that they can introduce a lot of new technology businesses there, bring people from Washington and around the rest of the states into West Virginia to rekindle what is actually a beautiful state. So how he's going to play this game, I'm not sure. But my bet is it'll be a two-step process. What the Republicans want will be passed as joint, and what they don't want will go to reconciliation.
I'm going to circle back on tax in a moment, but one area that actually has found bipartisan support is getting the U.S. back on track in taking on China. Republicans wouldn't want to be accused of supporting the Red Menace, after all. We've discussed this at length previously, Ed, the need to develop and produce new technologies, electric cars, semiconductors and microelectronics, as per that bill you sent me through yesterday. But what's the latest?
Well, that bill is passed or passing. It's $56 billion for basic computer and related infrastructure development and technology development. Another 100 or so billion in related technologies and new technology development, particularly aimed at what the Americans have suffered. And that is these hijackings by people who can get their computer codes and stall an oil industry, stall an entire city, and swipe our innovation information from public and government computers. So I think the Republicans would be remiss not to support this. But a lot of this is not necessarily new money. These were things were stalled within the old administration. So that money is, if you cut a little out of defense and cut a little here and so forth, these are not new money bills, but at least it's moving in the right direction. And as soon as that money can get there, things like the National Science Foundation, where I've been a member for a long time, that money will start trickling down to the computer industries and computer science departments so they can get a move on the next wave of technology.
Well, as we say, infrastructure, innovation, and just how Biden is going to pay for all this, a new report based on IRS data shows that the 1%, the wealthiest Americans, are paying minuscule income tax as a percentage of their wealth. Now, we know Biden is looking at raising taxes on the wealthy and giving the IRS more power to pursue those that are cheating on their taxes. But it should be noted most of what is being done is already perfectly legal and kind of won't be affected by those raises. I mean, the uber rich tend to have their wealth invested in stocks, real estate, allowing them to avoid taxes on unrealized profits. It's so implicit in the system. Is there really a way of getting the rich to pay their fair share?
Well, that's the subject of an entire show. Because the richer you are, the more favors you get from government and from everyone else. You notice when you get that platinum card and the airlines, you get the good meals and not the cheap side. So the rich get richer because they get more, and government is right at the head of the line. Most congressmen do not raise their money in their home districts. They raise most of their money in New York City, where the stock exchange is, where many of the large businesses are, and where the wealthy people make their money. So I think trying to get at this is going to have to come from a very different direction, one that's been proposed by Warren Buffett and others, and that is a flat tax for the wealthy. That is, no matter how much they make after they do all their deductions and so forth, they pay a flat 6%, 7%, 8% of the wealth they made that year in taxes. That has a lot of strength among the uber rich. As you move down the line to the people who are only wealthy, who only make $100 million or so, it is less likely to have any oomph. But I think there is now a growing consciousness, even among the wealthy people, if they don't pay better taxes, they're the losers.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, people think this is insurmountable, but I'm just thinking back in the late 1700s, the French came up with a pretty good solution, I thought, to these kinds of societal issues.
Yes, but we don't have very many places to cut people's heads off anymore.
Biden is actually out of the country on his first foreign outing since taking the White House. He's going to be in Brussels for a summit with NATO and then meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Switzerland. Ed, what's on the agenda?
Well, the usual things. I believe we talked about this last week. The whole business of what's going on in Crimea, the business with what's going on with his adversaries in his own country, the relationship between the United States and Russia on these technology issues, which are all over the news, in which the Russians deny taking much part, but those thugs wouldn't be as thuggish if they weren't unleashed on purpose. So I think there's a lot on the agenda. It seems from kind of the underlanguage that Putin wants to make a deal because he's in a hard place in his own country. He'd like some of that pressure released. And he is no friend of Trump. A Trump hotel is not important to him.
Well, I think we'll have more to talk on this one next week. We'll have more to analyze next week. Kamala Harris has her own sit-down this week with Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, discussing various bits of progress between the two countries, but in particular, looking at curbing the migration of Central American migrants through Mexico. In fact, she's angered some on the left by telling would-be migrants on her return, do not come to the US, do not come illegally, and warning that they will be turned back. Ed, any takeaways?
First of all, that is the right answer to the problem. You get immigration permission at your embassy, not at the border. The Mexicans are the ones who can stop this because the first border they crossed from Central America is the Mexican border. Most people don't know this, but more Mexicans, people of Mexican ancestry, who've crossed the border have gone back since 1998 than have come. And there are two reasons for this. People who came before were well-educated and could get good jobs in the United States, paying decent wages and kind of avoid the tax man. Now they can get great jobs in Mexico because the nation's moving up, the middle class is growing there. And they don't mind paying the taxes there as long as they can curb the crime and it is an easier place to live. And they speak the language. The people who are coming are people who are poorly educated. Their hope for a future in Central America are almost doomed for several reasons. Many people don't know this, but banana crops are being destroyed by a fungus that almost nobody knows how to bring under control. And bananas, they were called banana republics because that was the currency in those countries. They are not great places to holiday, so they're not getting money from tourism. So they have to do fruits. And the best thing the United States can do and Mexico can do is having more fruits that can be transshipped to the United States quickly through Texas for dinner tables. Americans are suffering from drought. They need that fruit production. They need those vegetable productions. There is still water in Mexico and beyond. And I think the thing to do is get those people back into farming. They are not going to be big technology folk, and open the Panama Canal to better shipping. That's the path to the future. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
On COVID, the US vaccination rate has slowed to under a million a day. Over 300 million doses have already been given and still doing pretty damn well from a cold start. But it does challenge Biden's goal of having 70% of the adult population at least partially vaccinated by July 4th. Ed, from what I observe here, it's not really, you know, an active resistance to vaccines. It's not all about this active resistance to vaccines. It's just people who don't really feel like their day-to-day lives are affected by COVID and won't be affected by a vaccine, so they don't care. How do you speed things up again?
I don't think you should speed things up. This is now a social disease. People who are talking to other people, grandma's talking to her kids, and her kids say, we don't get vaccinated. Grandma's saying, don't come visit me. Mm. I think we're at that point. Something like 75% of the people in California have been vaccinated. Even the worst state, Mississippi, has 40%. We're talking about fine-tuning here, not mass transformation. We would be lucky in Australia to be as good as Mississippi. The other thing is the dispersed character of the United States. Unlike Australia, there are a lot of small towns, villages, and the like that have not been affected by COVID at all. They're well inland, they're away from the disease pockets, they've been able to ship the goods and things they need. The places that have been affected, if you notice, are where the meatpacking firms and organizations are, where there's a higher density of immigrants and others and a higher rates of poverty and neglect. Those places seem to be getting vaccinated. So I think we're talking about the hollowing out of America in that regard, that there are going to be holes in the vaccination screen, but there are in the influenza screen. So I think Joe will get close to 70%, particularly as they start getting more of the young people who are pro-vaccine into the game. But the big states, New York, California, Illinois, and those places are already over 70%. So if I were Biden, I would provide some incentives, but the big disincentive is already Europe's passed no vaccine card, no come. Canada, no vaccine card, no come. Mexico will surely be next.
And while we're on this, Anthony Fauci, probably the leading face of the US, if not global COVID response, has been under fire since well before Biden took the White House. The release of around 4,000 emails sent through the early days of the pandemic haven't helped him this week. One key revelation is that he knew of the theory that COVID had escaped from a Wuhan laboratory long before it was public mainstream. Ed, can Fauci survive the latest?
I think he can, but he's a wounded eagle. And a lot of those wounds are self-inflicted, and they also hurt because he's a person who has a lot of pride. You can even hear it in his voice now, that he's not as staunch and not as deliberate as he was in the Trump era. But what doesn't go out of fashion? The only thing I can think of is our show. But everything else in Australia, in the United States, remember when Morrison was doing such a great job here? Mm. Well, you know, that's out of fashion. The news now is about personalities, not purpose, not policies, not direction. Fauci will take his time, but he will leave the administration and he will be replaced by someone who has a little more personal style. But he's done a great job. He should get another medal.
Israel, and last week we saw a coalition poised to take control of the chaotic government situation. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been taking some lessons from Donald Trump, says, however, the coalition is the result of the greatest election fraud in the history of democracy, spurring fears of political violence. You know, it's not just a regular, it's never a sort of a regular election fraud. It's always the greatest election fraud. The new coalition, no set date for being sworn in yet, but expected to be June 14th. Ed, what's going on?
Well, you've just stated it all. This new coalition is a coalition to get rid of Netanyahu. They have no purpose beyond that. And that's where they're going to struggle a lot, because the fault lines among Israelis and Palestinians are very deep, and it's going to be hard to pave them over. The United States is going to have to get into this mess on the side of pavement, that is, diplomatic pavement. Behind the scenes, a lot of diplomacy that will bring Palestine a little bit of physical construction, which will be good for the United States, because you always have to use United States tractors and infrastructure and employees, much like China does. And the United States will then have a chance to do a lot of back channeling in Palestine against Hamas, because a full stomach is the best thing you can get to fight Hamas. On the other side, the Israelis are tired of this, and they're tired of the construction projects on Palestinian land. This whole business of kicking people out of 8 or 10 apartment buildings and disrupting the nation, they are sick and tired of it. So I would anticipate an Arab-Israeli spring. In that spring, if you can do something worthwhile, now is the time to do it.
And just before I let you go, Ed, the first Biden judges have been confirmed by the Senate this week. This was one area Republicans were undoubtedly very successful with during Trump's term. Democrats have said they want to rebalance the courts. How do you think they'll redress the balance going forward?
Well, there are several things. There's clearly there are always retirements. And there are some people who are appointed by Republicans before who are willing to give up their seats for Democrats, moderate Republicans, to help that rebalancing. So I think a lot of that will take place. Here's a case where you have the moderate senators who can weigh in and say, look, we gave Trump the people he wants. Let's give Biden the people he wants. They've only turned down one person Biden had up for a cabinet post. I think they will not turn down many of these judges. And in my mind, the court, even though the people appointed may have been by Trump, jurisprudence is run by judgment, not by politics.
Ed and I will be back next week to talk all the latest in US news and politics. Subscribe wherever you find the podcast. Maybe drop us a review if you're feeling generous. And check us out on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. Pacific Conversations, also the new podcast. Check that one out at edtalks.com.au or wherever you find good podcasts. Latest episode, as I mentioned before, Bob Carr, former foreign minister, former New South Wales premier, chatting to us about America and Australia's relationship.